Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our literary discussion hour here as we talk about the Wit Festival coming next month to Lenox, and then asking the question in this segment of Is Reading at Risk? This segment came from me bumping into my pal and Roundtable tech guru Jesse Feiler while walking through a lobby of a Manhattan hotel. That led to coffee. That led to this segment as we discussed for a really long time, what is the future of reading? Jesse said, okay, let me flesh it out. And boy, did he. As we continue our literary theme, we welcome author and tech guru Jesse Feiler. Jesse, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
Wonderful to have you with us. We also welcome literary agent Barbara Hoganson to discuss the topic. Hello, Barbara. How are you?
Very well. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much for being here. And Ruth Dickey, the Executive Director of the National Book Foundation, thank you, Ruth, for being here.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
This is a wonderful group of really terrific guests to discuss something that's incredibly important. Jesse, give us the kind of the idea behind all this of why it's important to discuss and talk about this very question. Is reading at risk?
Well, it started.
Sorry, I just like shoved the microphone into Jesse's face. My apologies.
That's okay. It started from on one day, two or three people, who are sort of obnoxious anyway, said to me.
Let's start that way. Okay.
Yeah, we'll start that way. I didn't say who they were.
No, I know.
We'll get to that later. Two or three people said to me, we were talking something about books or something. Someone said, are people still reading books? And I thought that's a valid question. I knew the answer because I read books. Everyone I know who reads books. But I started looking into, because this being the internet, I was able to find tons of data about people reading and how many people are reading, why they are reading, and what they are reading. And I put, we usually do here, I put some of these documents online so people can find out what the numbers are.
JesseFeiler.com, and we'll give that out at the end. Barbara Hoganson, as a literary agent and just having been in the publishing business and in the book business for a long time, how do you look at this particular period and think of why we even need to ask that question?
Well, I suppose probably the biggest concern for me is book bans. And I think that puts reading at risk more than just about anything right now. I know that book sales are up, and I think Ruth is going to address all of the stats about the increase in book sales, the number of independent bookstores. But I guess what I am most concerned with are book bans right now, which I do think puts reading at risk.
Ruth Dickey, as we mentioned, is the National Book Foundation's executive director, has been in that role since 2021. And give us a sense, Ruth, of what the last several years have been like for you in this role and what work you have accomplished and what work still needs to be done.
Oh, gosh. Well, thanks. Thanks so much for having the conversation about reading, which I think is such an important conversation to be having. As Barbara mentioned, it's an unprecedented time for book bans, so I think it's a time for all of us to really be thinking about books and how we can support them. At the Foundation, we work to celebrate books, expand their audience, and ensure books have a prominent place in our culture. And we reach an audience of about 2.2 million readers each year and work year-round, particularly to reach readers who have historically experienced barriers to accessing books and writers through our education and public programs. And that means we give away free books and present free events at public libraries, public housing communities, schools, and community centers in all 50 states, reaching tens of thousands of readers with free programming and books every year. And we're hitting a couple big milestones this summer we're excited about. So the National Book Awards will celebrate 75 years this year, which we're thrilled about. And this summer, we also gave away our 2 millionth book in a program called Book Rich Environments, which connects families living in HUD-assisted housing with free, high-quality, diverse books and literacy resources. So that's been really exciting. But I think the question that Barbara was referring to around, you know, why is this a time we should be asking, and that you wisely asked, why should we be asking, is reading at risk? I think part of that is about book bans. You know, the American Library Association data shows that there were more than 4,200 challenged titles in 2023, and that's up from an average of just 275 annually in the years before 2021. So you can see that's just an incredibly huge increase in the number of book bans. And also in schools, there were over 4,000 instances of book banning in schools in 42 states across the U.S., and that was from the first half of the current school year. And in the prior semester, there were just around 1,800. So again, like huge jumps in books being the right to read being taken away from kids and readers.
I worry about funding to community libraries and also the risk at which librarians are being put because of book bans. So I recently attended a conference, and as a former librarian, I realize how important it is for all communities to, you know, celebrate and to support their libraries and also their librarians. So I think by having a strong community that supports libraries and librarians, we help to put reading at less of a risk.
Is there something, Barbara, I'll start with you on this, but is there something that, because a library may be trying to have certain books on its shelf or have certain programs that will, within a community setting, become controversial, it then becomes political, which I assume is the last thing a library wants and the last thing a library should be?
Well, very recently I read an article, and I can't remember the differences between how states like Texas and Florida are dealing with books that are being placed on shelves, and whether or not, if you're a parent, you have the right to request that a book be placed on that shelf. And if you are not a parent with a child in school, you're limited to perhaps one book per month. There are all sorts of rulings that are coming in. So I'm not certain, you know, how we can get away from you know, creating these what I would call absurd rulings without the community stepping in and just saying, we won't permit this.
And Ruth, I mean, I can't get away from what Barbara just said of it. It's just the absurdity of it. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't understand, and I want to get into the technical aspects of this with Jesse in just a second, but it just doesn't make sense to me of why it continues, because it seems to me if there's material that's in a library, and then you don't take it out.
Yes, I think that's an incredibly rational response, and I think the point that Barbara was just making is, as books are under heightened assault, so are the schools, teachers, libraries, librarians, bookstores, and booksellers who are making those books available to readers who want them. And I think it's also important to note that the majority of books that are showing up on these lists as books that are banned are books that feature diverse stories and diverse characters. And I think that there is no accident in that. And it's really important for readers to be able to find and see themselves in books and stories. And that's why I think it's so important for all of us to care about our libraries, our schools, our bookstores, and that really be on their side when these issues pop up in communities.
I know.
Also, I wanted to mention, and Ruth, please add to this, but I believe that the Brooklyn Public Library has a program where if you live in a community and a book has been banned, they can make the book available to you.
And it's programs like that that are, I mean, so helpful in understanding. I read an article, I think it was in the Washington Post, and I just, I'm hoping, Ruth, I guess you could probably confirm this for me, but of the book bans that are taking place in the country, what is surprising is how few people are behind them. It's very few people with a lot of influence.
And that actually is connected to all of the other things that are going on in our world today, is particularly with social media. Very, very small numbers of people can do very big things because they're able to multiply their activities. And that, I think that's something that we never really have talked about too much. I mean, we as a society.
Sure.
That the danger of the internet.
Ruth?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. And I think the point you're making is very astute, that it's often a very small number of people who are advocating for and pushing forward book bans. And I think that's why it's so important for everyone who cares about books and access to books and the freedom to read to engage with these issues, because really there is a large community of people. In fact, the majority of people in the country really support access to books and the freedom to read. And I think social media is, it can be used for terrible things. It can also be used for great things. I think we've seen a huge surge in the ways that online platforms are helping readers find books and also readers find community in books. The Bookstagram has created an incredibly vibrant online community around books. BookTok has garnered over 220 billion views. So I think there are good and bad things, as in any medium, there are good and bad things happening. And I think for all of us who care about books, the question is, how are we being aware of what's happening in our local communities? And when our library or our public school or our bookstore needs us to show up, are we coming out and showing up and supporting the librarians and booksellers and teachers?
The one of the other things too is that I've heard that while many of the books do eventually return to the shelves, and that is a good thing, but then, Ruth, really that the damage has already been done too, though, right? I mean, there's still been a significant damage done just in that process of having them initially banned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's also examples of what's called silent banning happening, when books aren't banned, but they're being pulled from shelves because of a fear that they will be banned and a controversy. So I think that all of those are a loss when the books and stories aren't available for readers who want to find them.
It goes, Barbara, you touched on this, and it goes so against, my mother was a librarian. I worked in a library. That was my first job ever as a page in a library. I grew up in a library. I don't know. It's so against, you were talking about supporting the libraries and bookstores, independent bookstores. It's so against their just very being of having anyone walk in and ask for something and not being able to get it for them because it had to be taken off the shelf or through interlibrary loan or however they can get it. And also just to not have it available in the first place. I mean, that's so against what it is that they're there to do.
Exactly. But I do think that there are a number of librarians who are out there now who recognize that if a book isn't on their shelf or it isn't in their, let's say it's a city and there's a county library, they make suggestions to where particularly a young person might be able to find that book. But in making that suggestion, there is always the fear that there will be some sort of retaliation, punishment for making a suggestion right on where to find a book, even if it's not in their collection. So I think it then becomes, you know, the freedom to read, but also the freedom of speech, which is endangered too. But Joe, there are some good news out there, and we want to touch on that as well. And something that Ruth and Jesse and I were talking about is the increase in readers between the ages of 18 and 24. And I think that's very important that it's pointed out that there are younger people who are reading, and many of them are involved in book clubs, which have become socialization opportunities for them.
Well,
and how did that happen, Jesse?
Well, partly through all of the social media that's going on. What I was going to say that we're seeing one part of the good news that's gone is there are more things happening, more books are being published. And Barbara told me the other day something I didn't know. New genres of books are emerging. Which, I mean, people are saying that books are dead. No, new genres are. Barbara, do you want to tell what that genre is?
I just mentioned to him there is something now which is called romantasy.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is a combination of romance and fantasy. And that's, as far as I know, sort of a new genre. Ruth, are you familiar with it from previous years?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of exciting things that are happening across many different genres. And I also want to point out book sales are up, and we all know that book sales surged dramatically during the pandemic, which in a way is no surprise because for many of us, that was the form of entertainment that was available to us. But still in 2023, there were the estimate is over 1 billion books were bought in 2023, which, although it's a little drop from 2022, it's still 10% greater than 2019 before the pandemic. So I think that's amazing news about reading. I also think the growth and vibrancy of independent bookstores is extraordinary. I moved to New York from Seattle, and the first independent bookstore day in Seattle was in 2015, and there were 19 participating bookstores. This year, there were 28. And our friends at the American Booksellers Association shared that there are over 200 bookstores that opened in the past year, and many bookstores who expanded. So I think that is a really hopeful metric, because especially in this time of weathering challenges from book banning, it's heartening that small stores continue to open and engage their community in unique ways. So I think there are many points of hope amidst all of this.
You know, you bring that up, and I just want to flesh that out just a little bit for our listeners. We have a segment every Tuesday on the show. We have independent booksellers who come and give us their selections for the week, and we've been doing this for the 25 years that we've been doing this show. And what's so cool is that I believe in that 25 years we've only lost one bookstore out of more than, I think, 24 stores. We've only lost one. And that's really incredible. And it shows the power of those stores in their communities. These are large stores, they're small stores, and how they're doing. And there was a point where we were all talking about, you know, can these stores make it, especially with e-readers and so forth? And here they are, and they've become centerpieces of the community. Jesse, talk a little bit about that. I mean, even in the sense of banning a book, it seems silly to me when we say, okay, well, they've banned the book, and yet I can pick up my phone and get it in 4 seconds.
Yeah, that's one of the terrible things about this internet, is all these people are able to access material that they shouldn't be looking at. So it, you know, we're fighting back and forth. No, it's really hard to stifle information in this age. But the flip side of that is that it's very easy to create information that's wrong.
Right.
So yeah. We're in this very strange period now, where we are expanding the possibilities and then at the same time stifling them. So I don't know how it's going to resolve itself.
Do all of us in this room count ebook and audiobooks as reading?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Me too.
Yes.
Yes. Because you're getting it in your brain, right? That's how, and if you're on a long car ride and you're not sitting down reading, that's still a pretty wonderful way to get the information.
The one thing that my crusade, which has not taken shape yet, is I would really like it to be possible. Some publishers will publish a book as audio and print.
And do it
as
together.
As one package.
I agree.
And it's at one point, there seemed to be a glimmer that that might be coming.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen, I don't know, has Barbara seen it yet?
I think we were talking about this, yeah. Jesse. It's like going to the old Blu-ray days where you have the DVD, the yeah. Blu-ray, and the download all in one package, where something like that where you could have those options to you.
Because it's, I guess publishers don't mind this too much. Some people will buy an ebook as well as an audiobook.
Oh, I buy all three. Yeah.
So it's,
I do think that there are Kindles that can be used for both reading and listening, but the audiobooks on a Kindle are limited to Audible only, I believe.
And the problem with the a lot of the audiobooks, there's a difference between the audiobooks that are actual audiobooks,
right,
and the synthesized books.
Yes. So I think one of them is called a WhisperCast or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they'll do the they'll have you're going to get mad at me, Jesse, when I say this, but they have a robot read it to
yes.
you, as opposed to
synthesized, we call it.
Yeah. Okay. So synthesized, as opposed to Meryl Streep reading us the new Ann Patchett book.
Yeah, she's booked up for years.
Yes. As it should be. it's one of the other things too that of how podcasts fit into this, Jesse.
Is that a question? I don't know. Yeah. It's part of this whole thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Where we're sharing information in ways we never did before.
And we can learn more about books through that.
More.
Yeah.
We can learn more good things. We can learn more bad things. You know, it's...
I'm going to ask this question to both Ruth and Barbara. I will ask it to Jesse if we have time, but I think I already know the answer. And Ruth, so what gives you hope?
Oh, gosh, so many things give me hope. One of the great joys of my work is that I get to go with writers to different communities around the country for events. And we were in rural Montana with Tommy Orange and Tess Gunty for an event with in partnership with a local nonprofit there called Elk River Arts and Lectures. And folks drove up to 6 hours to be with us for that event. And that gives me a tremendous amount of hope. And I we're celebrating 75 with a giant summer reading adventure for adults, which is on our website. It's free. It's prize-filled. It harkens back to a summer reading of childhood. And in the first month that was out, we had over 500 people sign up and start participating, which I thought was amazing. And just a joyful, who doesn't want to read books and win free ice cream? So, that gives me a lot of hope.
Barbara, your hope.
Well, I'm excited by how many young people are reading. And also, I love the idea of taking all of the used books that we have and being able to donate them to someone like Gail Brewer on the Upper West Side, who then in turn creates a book fair where young people can come in and just fill a bag of books.
Mm.
So knowing that that is available to readers on the Upper West Side or Manhattan gives me a great deal of hope.
Jesse, do you have hope?
Yes.
Okay.
Because there are so many options now.
Yeah.
I don't know, 20 years or so ago, we were talking differently about books. We were saying there was a lot of talk about books dying out. And I haven't heard that for a while. Partly because there's so many new genres and so many new revenue realms for people to create books.
A lot going on in the world, in the book world, and so happy to be able to talk about it. You can find out more at jessefeiler.com. jessefeiler.com, where a lot of the data is will live and is there. My thanks to Jesse, Ruth, and Barbara. You're all wonderful. Thank you so much for the great work you do.
Thank you.
Be well.
Thank you
so much for having us.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.